Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for clicking onto this podcast. In this episode, I had the pleasure of talking to Emily Petrikola. She is a Paralympian cyclist, and she is really, really an inspiration. Make sure you go check out her Instagram at m_Petrikola_cycling, and my Instagram at twintalkaus, and my website, ameliabaxter.com.au. Now let's get into the podcast.
Hi there, my name's Amelia, and I'm the host for Tween Talk. Here, we'll be talking all things tween, fashion, beauty, food, and lots more.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to this podcast. Today, I have a very, very special guest, Emily Petrikola. Hi, Em.
Hey, Amelia, how are you going?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yes, pretty good for this Saturday morning.
So how has it been going, like with Corona and stuff?
Yeah, it's been pretty challenging at various points. It was obviously pretty tough when they first postponed the Olympics. But to be honest, I sort of always saw that as a bit of a positive because for me it was like, okay, disappointing that it's not happening this year, but the advantage in that is that it gives me one more year to get even better. So it's had its ups and downs, but we're tracking along pretty well at the minute. So
yeah, because all your training, how's your training going? Because like some of it would have been cancelled, wouldn't it?
Yeah, when we first went into lockdown over here in Adelaide, because I'm based in Adelaide at the moment, the velodrome was closed for about 3 months. So I had to come off the track and just do all road work. But that's not a bad thing for me because road has been traditionally not quite as strong as my track. So sort of that was a good opportunity there to strengthen that. But it was hard to come off the track because that is my preferred sort of discipline.
Yeah. Okay, so for the people who don't know who you are, who kind of are you and what do you do?
Yep, so my name's obviously Emily Petrikola and I'm a WC4 paracyclist on the Australian national team. I'm the current world champion in the road time trial as well as on the track this year. I won 3 world titles in the individual pursuit, the scratch race and the Omnium events.
Well, that's a lot.
Yeah, I'm also the world record holder in the individual pursuit as well.
So, like, have you always been cycling? Like,
no.
No?
In short, no. No, actually fairly new to sport. When I was at school, I was a rower.
Yeah.
And I rode for a few years after school. I was actually tapped on the shoulder to do track cycling as an able-bod when I was about 21, but at the time I'd just finished rowing and I wasn't really interested in taking up another sport. I just wanted to have a normal life for a little while, and so didn't go down that path. And then when I was 27, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, which was pretty devastating and took a fair toll and has taken a bit of a toll on my body, so I've got some disability linked with that. And as a part of that, initially for probably the first 6.5 years, I think it was, I couldn't do any exercise because every time I tried, my core body temperature would go up and it would set off a lot of my MS symptoms. And I'd been coaching rowing at Wesley College and was working with a guy called Matt Ryan, who was 2-time Olympian, and I think he won a silver medal at I think it was at Beijing or might have been at London. In the four, and he and I were working together and I said, can you help me get into exercise? I've tried everything I know, but I'm having these problems. And he had a watt bike, and so he said, I think we can set you up on the watt bike in our shared office with the AC on and a fan in your face, keep your temperature down, and we'll just start really small because I hadn't been able to do anything for a long time and I'd put on a heap of weight with my medication. I was on steroids every time I got sick, so that sort of makes you put on weight as well. So I was about 115 kilos, I reckon, when we first started. And we started really small. And within a year, he was like, I think you should think about the Paralympics because your numbers seem quite good and your fitness has come along pretty well. And my initial response to that was, Matt, I can't do that. And he was like, oh, the woman who won the last Paralympics on the road in the time trial, she had MS. It was Carol Cook. And So I researched that and I was like, okay, I'll see if I can get classified. And I went along and I could. So that's sort of where it all started. Back in 2015, we started working together.
That's so cool. Because, like, if you have been, like, diagnosed with MS, that's obviously something really big, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And so to go from that to, like, legit a Paralympian, that's so cool.
Well, let's hope. I'm not there yet. We've got one more year to go. That's the plan. Yeah, it's the plan. Well, it's amazing for me to sort of, when I think back now to the fact that someone had said to me, you know, back when I was 21, before any of this had happened, that I should think about track cycling, because I've always been quite strong and I've obviously always had the physiology that suited the sport. So when I think back to that, I'm like, I wonder what I could have been if I didn't have my disability, like if I had done it back then. But I think for me, whenever I think that sort of, my brain goes down that pathway, I also then think, I think it means a lot more for me now in this scenario, sort of coming to it through MS, because it's given me, like, it's been a massive silver lining of the pretty dark cloud that MS can be. So, yeah, it's really, it's been enormously important in terms of being able to move forward with my illness. And I'm just so grateful that Matt sort of suggested it back 5 years ago now.
Yeah. So, like, some people wouldn't know what MS is. So what is it?
Yeah, so MS is a disease of the nervous system. It attacks the myelin sheath around the nerves. And effectively, you can't predict what's going to happen or when it's going to happen. And it can sort of impact any part of your body, because obviously your nerves are a part of every movement or every function in your body. So for every single person with MS, you have different symptomology and a different sort of disease course. But for me, predominantly, like, all four limbs are impacted for me. My left side is definitely more significantly impacted than my right. My hands don't work very well, so I drop things a lot and I struggle to hold on to the bars on the bike. I can't actually ride a normal road bike with the drop bars, you know, the rounded ones. I have to just, I can only ride a time trial bike with the flat bar, so I actually just sort of rest my hands on top. Because I struggle to grip, and have come off a few times going down hills because I either can't grip well enough or control the front of the bike well enough because of my hands and my shoulders and what goes on sort of through my arms. So I've had a couple of big crashes doing that. Wouldn't recommend it. one of the great things about being a para athlete in the national team for Australia is that the Australian Paralympic Committee sort of invest in trying to come up with solutions to minimise the danger. So they're actually at the moment, we've done a heap of trialling and testing to work out what sort of grip is going to be the best for me or help maximise what I can do on the bike. So that's great as well.
Yeah. Those crashes, they would be kind of big, wouldn't they?
Oh, yeah, they've been pretty impressive. Like, they look scary. I think I've been lucky in that I haven't had significant breaks or anything from them. So that's one good thing, is when you're on your own, you're less likely to hurt, number one, anyone else, but also the crashes generally sort of are a bit more controlled.
True. Because, like, when I crashed my bike, I just fall on the ground and just...
Yeah, I don't often crash. I have crashed a couple of times on the flat, but it's usually just coming down a hill because I can't control what's happening sort of with my hands. And, like, I can either overbrake or underbrake, but I don't really know what's going to happen because my hands sort of overreact sometimes as well. And so when that happens, then obviously you grab the brake a bit too hard and you end up going over the handlebars. So not fun. Wouldn't recommend it. But I still do it.
Yeah, never give up.
No, that's exactly right. You've got to get back on and keep trying.
So what's it like being part of, like, the Australian team?
It's so cool because our team, actually, our cycling team, our paracycling team, is super successful at the moment. We've got a really strong group of athletes, and it's amazing because we have athletes that have been to many games and some athletes like me that have been to none. So you've got, like, a really wide, varied level of experience across the group. You know, we've got people like Dave Nicholas, who is someone who's been, I think he's going, lining up for his third Paralympic Games. And he won a gold in London and he won a gold in Rio in two different disciplines. and like he's won every world championship on the track, like in the individual pursuit between within this cycle. So like being able to be on a team with someone like that who's just such an incredible athlete, and you know, he's got cerebral palsy, so just seeing what he overcomes himself, like it's super inspiring. Like our team is amazing. I'm so grateful and so privileged to be a part of it.
Yeah, it's just so cool.
It is. It's amazing. It's incredible. And I feel really fortunate and lucky that I'm a part of it.
Obviously, yeah. Yeah. So you're like nearly an Olympian now. So you've probably got a really tough training schedule.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. But because I have MS, like one of the difficulties that we face is I can't do probably as much volume as a lot of the people who I race against can, because fatigue is a really big problem. Because if you think about MS, like whenever there's an interruption, so every time the myelin sheath gets damaged, that's an interruption to the pathway with the nerves. And so every time there is an interruption, that message then has to go back to the brain to be sent in a different way. So that sort of creates a big level of sort of neurological fatigue. So for my coaches and myself, like it's difficult to manage the load. So whilst I feel like I do a lot compared to some of the other people who I race against who are out, I can't do a 4 or 5 hour ride. Or if I did, it would put me in bed for several days afterwards. So we have to be pretty smart with what we're doing. I generally don't do too much more than 2 or 2.5 hour rides. I think every now and then we'll throw in a 3 hour just to touch it, but not very often. Especially as well because I'm doing both road and track, we have to manage that, the intensity pretty carefully.
Yeah, two and a half hour ride, I couldn't do that, no way.
I know, when I think about it in terms of your average Joe going down the street, like I know that it's still a lot more, like it's a lot more than what other people might do. And I often have two sessions in a day as well, so I might have track in the afternoon on a ride in the morning, or gym in the morning and track in the afternoon or something like that. So there's still a lot going on, and it is a pretty intense schedule, but it has to be very, very carefully managed.
Yeah. So what would probably be your ultimate goal of like all time?
My ultimate goal of all time, I've got given myself like which I'm not going to disclose, a time that I want to do at the games in the individual pursuit.
Yeah.
But my ultimate goal for Tokyo initially is to win a gold medal in the individual pursuit and on the road in the individual time trial. They're my two big goals. And I've also got the time goal for the pursuit. And then my aim would be to then defend those two titles in Paris in 2024.
Definitely. I'm just going to be watching you. I'll be like,
Emily. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm very hopeful, number one, that I can hold form and make the team and just keep myself healthy enough to be able to perform in the way that I hope to.
Have you been to Tokyo before?
Never. Like I haven't actually spent a heap of time in Asia. I had a friend who lived in Singapore for a number of years, and so I've spent a bit of time in Singapore, and I've been to Hong Kong a couple of times. But outside of that, I haven't spent a lot of time in Asia, so it's an exciting and great opportunity to see another part of the world that I haven't spent a lot of time in.
Yeah, do you like travelling?
Yes, I love travelling. I've spent a lot of my life travelling. I actually lived overseas. I lived in the UAE for 3 years and taught over there, just an hour north of Dubai in a place called Ras Al Khaimah, which was probably one of the greatest experiences of my life. And my dad is Italian, so I've been to Italy numerous times. I've spent a lot of time in Europe. I've been to Canada several times. So I have spent a lot of I'm no spring chicken, so I spent a fair bit of my sort of younger years traveling around and seeing the world and sort of exposing myself to all the different cultures and the amazing sort of landscape that is international travel.
Yeah, because I love traveling, but like I don't get to do it very often because I've got like school.
Yeah.
And school and more school.
I am a teacher as well in my real life now, so. Well, not at the moment, but when I go back to it, like that's always the inhibiting factor is thinking about when can I actually go? I've got to actually work around school holidays and stuff now, so.
Yeah. Okay, so do you have any advice for anyone who might want to be an Olympian or a Paralympian?
Yeah, I think like the two things are a bit similar, but also like the commonality is that you have to work really hard. But I would say probably the biggest thing that I've learned in all of my life and my experience is that you've got to surround yourself with the right people. You've got to make sure you surround yourself with people who are positive and will support your vision, but will also be honest with you and truthful when you need it. Oftentimes, and I think, I imagine that you have a fairly young group of followers with your podcast. So when I think about all of the kids that I work with in terms of teaching, often you see young people surround themselves with people who they think are their friends, but they're actually sometimes being sabotaged by their friends. Like when they say, I want to, or they're too scared to say that they want to achieve something because they're worried about what people will think or that their friends will knock them for what they're saying that they do want to achieve. And my thing is like, always dream big, because what's the worst that's going to happen? If you're trying to, you know, reach for the stars, you might land on a cloud. Like you've just got to go as big and as hard as you can. You've got to believe in yourself, and you've got to surround yourself with people who believe in you but will also let you know when you're sort of taking it too far and ground you at the same time in a really supportive way, which is a hard balance.
That's like a really good piece of advice.
Yeah. Thanks. I'm a wise old woman.
Okay, so I've got a few fire questions for you now.
Go for it.
Okay. Other than cycling, do you have Other than cycling, what do you love to do?
I love to read. I'm an English teacher. I'm a bit of a nerd at heart. I love to read, and I also just love to hang out with my friends, which I don't get to do often enough with my training and now that I've sort of live interstate and away from the majority of my friends. So Zoom has been a godsend through COVID. Like I actually had my 40th birthday in Adelaide and had Zoom parties with people both in Melbourne and in the UAE. So it was a strange way to spend my birthday, but I'm so grateful that I had that sort of option to celebrate with people that I still love and care about.
Definitely. I think I might have to do that for my birthday because it's coming up and I'm in Victoria.
Yeah, that's right. Like this is it.
You're going to have a massive Zoom party.
That's it. You've just got to. You've got to connect. You've got to stay connected. I think that's the most important thing at the moment with everyone going through what you're going through over in Melbourne.
Yeah. And,
you know, elsewhere in the world as well, is you have to be, make sure you keep your social connections up and feel like you're still, they're still there. They're not disappearing just because you're not with each other every day.
Yeah. So do you have any pet peeves?
I really hate it when people are late. That's probably one of my biggest pet peeves in life, is when people are late or when people use apostrophes incorrectly. The English teacher in me can't stand it. I suppose they're both sort of teacher qualities. Like if a child is late for class, I also find it, I can't bear it. I find it very disrespectful.
Yeah. My pet peeves. This might sound weird, but I hate squishy fruit.
Doesn't sound weird. I don't like it either.
It's like I can't eat a squishy grape.
Well, yeah, no, me neither. That's gross. It's too slimy.
Like everyone else thinks it's like, what?
Yeah, no.
Huh?
I'm with you, Millie.
Thank you. So what would you say is your biggest fear?
My biggest fear is probably disappointing the people who have invested a lot of time and energy in me. That's probably my biggest fear. But whenever I sort of start to think about that, I also think like they know that I've given everything that I possibly can, and I always do everything I can to the best of my ability. So yeah, I guess that would probably be it. Just disappointing.
Yeah, yeah. So like when I ask people that question, I usually get like spiders or
No, that stuff's all manageable. It's the disappointing of other people who you care about. That's what sort of is my fear.
Probably my biggest fear would be probably being alone, because I can't really. Well,
so you must find lockdown very hard.
I mean, yeah. I've got my family, but like.
Yeah. I think you've got to find a way to be okay being on your own as well, Millie.
Yeah.
That's my advice to you. I'm an extrovert as well.
A little bit for in general, don't really like being alone.
If you had a choice, you'd always choose to be with people. Definitely. The same. But it's also really important to make sure you do spend the time alone just so you can process your own thoughts and feelings.
Yeah. All right, they're all the questions I have for you. This has been so fun.
Yeah, good. I'm glad that you've had a good time. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
All right. See you.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Tune in next time for more tips and tricks on how to live the tween life.
Yeah, we had when we first went into the
Forget about that. That was my computer. Sorry.